Welcome to the Health Fix Podcast, where health junkies get their weekly fix of tips, tools, and techniques to have limitless energy, sharp minds, and fit physiques for life. Hey, health junkies. On this episode of the Health Fix Podcast, I'm interviewing Dr. Amy Rothenberg. She's been a naturopathic doctor since 1986, which means she's been around a long time and seen a lot of change in the naturopathic medicine industry. Plus, she's been a champion for naturopathic medicine and helping with multiple states to get licensure, and really a huge supporter in my field. So this is a big podcast for me. I'm super excited to have Dr. Rothenberg on. Now, she's wanting to talk about something that I think is probably one of the most important things that naturopaths need to stick with in our training. It's the idea that we can impact our own health by making good choices, removing obstacles to cure. We learned in school that there are many obstacles that get in the way of our body healing itself. You have a very intelligent body. If you've listened to my podcast before, you will hear me say this over and over again. And Dr. Amy Rothenberg is really a pioneer in keeping that concept going. She's a champion for that concept. And interestingly enough, she has practiced for a long time, but she also has had her own experience with cancer. And she was diagnosed in 2014, and she worked to put a team together for her care on her terms, which I think is an absolutely important thing to think about when you're looking at your overall team that's going to take care of you. I don't want it to be this us versus them in terms of conventional medicine docs versus naturopathic docs or functional medicine docs. Why can't we all just get along and work together? That is like the best way for medicine to evolve and work in a fabulous manner. Nevertheless, Dr. Amy Rothenberg has a book called You Finish Treatment, Now What? A Field Guide for Cancer Survivors. And this is huge because I think out in the universe, we've got this whole concept of what to do when you have cancer, what to do in that case, or maybe, you know, what your options are. But no one's talking about when everything's over, how to clean up that mess from chemo, how to continue living a healthy life and go on from there. So nevertheless, I'm really excited to introduce you to Dr. Amy Rothenberg. Let's get on with the podcast. Hey there, health junkies. Today, I have Dr. Amy Rothenberg on, and we're just going to geek out on naturopathic medicine a little bit for you because I haven't really talked about who I am, what I do, where it comes from. And Dr. Rothenberg is what we call OG in the naturopathic medicine world. She is an old school doc in terms of being in there at the beginning of when naturopathic medicine was really starting to take roots. And I'm excited to talk today. So Dr. Rothenberg, welcome to the Health Fix Podcast.
Thank you for having me. I feel like I'm 25. So when people introduce me like that, I always think, wow, okay, is that how I'm perceived? But I have been in practice since 1986. It's true. I would say that the profession really got its rebirth in the mid 70s. And late 70s, that we've been around for much longer than that, but it had kind of gone quiescent. And then along with the sort of back to earth health movement of the 1960s, that kind of came along at a time when there were people interested in bringing more of a medical perspective in that way. And I came into a naturopathic medical school that at the time was the only school that had ever graduated naturopathic doctors. Aside from Western States Chiropractic School, which was across the way in Portland, Oregon, it used to be a joint program. You could get an ND. They phased that out, and then NCNM and National College of Naturopathic Medicine was born. Of course, they had a name change about 10 years ago to National University of Natural Medicine. Okay, so there's that history. But when I was there, my first year, I believe that the school up in Seattle, Bastyr University, which was started by graduates of National, they were graduating their first class, I think, that year, maybe the year before. And then a couple of years later, Southwest College opened, also started by graduates of National, NCNM, Southwest College opened. And then now we have another school in Chicago. There is a school in Vancouver and in Toronto that have recently joined efforts. So When I graduated, there were six states that licensed naturopathic doctors at the time. They were all on the West Coast, except for Connecticut. And now there are 26, which is good. We're making our way one by one. We have added seven new states in the last 5 years, which is pretty exciting, and more to come.
Yeah, no, it's been a journey. And I think that's why I look at anyone who graduated in the 80s and even into the 90s as being in, you know, 70s, my goodness, of course, as being the folks who've really pioneered for this profession. Because all of us, you know, I graduated in 2007. For me, it's like, you guys laid the foundation for us. Total respect, and to the point where we're like, oh, I'm so excited I get to interview someone who's had so much experience in the industry. And so, yes, we were talking before we hit record about how Wisconsin just came online as being licensed in one of the states where I happen to live in part of the time. And it's an exciting time, but we haven't had always happy-go-lucky times. And that's where, you know, I love to put these podcasts together for us to chat. So let's talk a little bit about what brought you to naturopathic medicine all those years ago. What kind of had you go to Portland and go, okay, I'm doing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just want to, before I answer that question, yep, I would just like to insert one concept, is that, you know, the conventional medical world is a very big ship. Mm-hmm. And it is slowly turning toward naturopathic medicine kinds of approaches, treating the whole person, working to underscore the importance of lifestyle, diet, and exercise. These are things that really were not ever talked about in this through the 60s and 70s. I mean, my dad, and this kind of segues into how I got into naturopathic medicine. But the ship is sort of slowly turning toward us. And part of that is due to public demand. A lot of people are looking for a fresh perspective on their healthcare. Many people are living what they would consider sort of a natural lifestyle, and they want their medicine to match the lifestyle that they're living. A lot of people understand the problem with polypharmacy, that taking more and more drugs leads to more and more drug-drug interaction, drug-nutrient interaction, side effects, the prescribing cascade, where you take one drug, you get some side effects, you take another drug to treat the side of it. You know, people are onto it and people are not into it.
Yeah.
And then when we see the rise of things like, you know, our biggest killer still, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, cancer, all things, you know, when we look at those three big ones at once, we know that about 80% of the incidence of those ailments are lifestyle preventable. So it's such an enormous cost to public health to not be educating and informing and helping people live better lifestyles in order to prevent these big three. And I would add to that, those big three, cognitive decline. We have such an incredible increase in cognitive decline. And we know that the recent study came out a couple of years back that 200 of the most commonly prescribed medications have as one side effect cognitive decline. So when we hear that, you know, 60% of people over the age of 60 are on more than four drugs or some number like that, we can understand why we have so much cognitive decline, besides the fact that we're living longer lives. So I just love being in this profession, and I feel like we have so much to do and we have so many opportunities to find the right leverage points to bring our knowledge and expertise to the conventional medical model and to the people who are looking for it. So for me, I actually lost my dad when I was 12 and he was 48. He had a heart attack in his sleep. He had pretty much every single risk factor for cardiovascular disease. He smoked. He was overweight. He had a high stress job. He ate at that, what I would call then a typical American diet, standard American diet. Not good. Of course, the standard American diet in those days was much less bad than the standard American diet today, because there were less processed foods, there were less chemicals on the market, there were less fast food options. But nonetheless, it wasn't a, you know, it wasn't what we would consider an anti-inflammatory, heart healthy diet. They didn't even have those words. And all he was given in those years was blood pressure medicine, you know, that was it. No counseling around diet, exercise, which are things now anybody with a cardiovascular risk factor profile like him would be in with a nutritionist and, you know, physical therapy. And here is what we can do in terms of your diet. So he died. And that was terrible. As a family, we had four kids in our family. My mom was an at-home mom at the time. And a couple years later, she was diagnosed with breast cancer and died. And so there I was a young person without parents, and I had always wanted to be a doctor. I just was one of those people, just wanted to be a doctor. No medical people in my family. We're immigrant, impoverished people from haven't been around this country very long, you know. And but I got turned off to conventional medicine, and I call it conventional medicine now. Of course, I didn't have that language then. I got kind of turned off because they didn't do anything for my family. My dad was dead. My mom was dead. I had aunts that were also sick. I had cousins that had all kinds of problems that nobody seemed to be able to help. Really bad menstrual cramps, bad migraine headaches, terrible problems with asthma. And they just were being cobbled along. And I was like, well, I want to be a doctor, but that's just not going to work for me. I went to college. And as it happened, I just kept getting pulled back into biology and the human sciences. I was fascinated by biochemistry. I loved plant physiology. I got totally... So sorry, turn that off. I got totally involved with everything that I possibly could related to how the human body functions and nutrition. And I was living, you know, I was into yoga and I was vegetarian. I was a runner. And, you know, I just was living a good life thinking that I got into writing and I was really into journalism. And I thought, well, I'll just have a life related to writing and maybe something in the sciences. And I went to Antioch College in Yellow Springs, Ohio, wonderful place. And it's a work study school. So you work 3 or 6 months, like a semester, and then you have a job for 3 or 6 months. And the first few years, they encourage you to take jobs in anything, really, just to get experience to see what you like, you don't like. And I took a job in a lab at the University of Oregon Health Sciences Center in a physiology lab. And I got to Portland, Oregon, and I landed at, some of you listening may have ever been there, the Green Goddess restaurant in downtown Portland, Oregon, which was like a vegetarian restaurant. They made like smoothies. And it was like the first time I ever had tofu. This is 1980. I'd never heard of tofu. And I went to this restaurant. I had my backpack with all my worldly possessions and one box of books and a few family things. It was everything I kind of owned. And there was a sign on the board. It was a ride sign, you know, like an housing sign. And it said, this is well before the internet, 3 naturopathic students looking for a 4th housemate. And I thought, naturopath, what is that? They must be doing work on like trail maintenance in nature preserves or something. I just had no idea what that word meant. I walked over the Morrison Bridge to the address that I'd written down from that card, and I knocked on their door. There were no cell phones. I mean, you know, and I sound like I'm like from the 1850s. I knocked on the door and I basically said, hey, I saw your son. I'd love to live here. It was $75 a month.
Wow.
Okay. Well, that first night at dinner, the people I lived with were a first, a second, and a third year students at the naturopathic school. And they started talking about what they were doing. And I was like, oh my God, this is exactly up my alley. It's like, I always wanted to be a doctor, and you're kind of focusing on lifestyle things and nutrition and herbs and other natural things. And I started volunteering at the school in the afternoons after my other job. I'd volunteer in the clinic. I volunteered on a couple of committees and I got to know some people. Well, I hightailed it back to college. I finished my prerequisites. And when I was 20, I landed at naturopathic school, ready to rock and roll. And of course, you know, as things happened that very first day, I met my future husband, who was a classmate. We didn't actually get together till our 4th year, but we were friends and we had a beautiful education together. And I mean, it was so perfect for me. I was just the exact right kind of person, I think, although there's many kinds of people that would make wonderful naturopathic doctors. I was so young and I was so open, and there were so many generous teachers and mentor people and people enthusiastic people coming on board about the profession. I feel like I was mentored right from the beginning to be a spokesperson for the profession, to write for the profession, to lead legislative campaigns, obviously to have what I've been very blessed, a successful practice of medicine. And so it was just such a thrill. I enjoyed every minute of it, even though it was super hard. we learned a lot. And I would say that the education now of a naturopathic doctor is there so much more to know and to learn, that your educations are much better than mine. I mean, mine was good for the standard of the time, but that we know more now. Mm-hmm. I do mourn a little bit because we knew a little less. We leaned more into what I would call the vitalistic traditions. the things that really stimulate the inherent healing capacity, and less into sort of the list of supplements, which I think is sort of the lowest common denominator of naturopathic medicine. We leaned a little bit more into those other approaches. And that is still the way that I practice personally. But there's room for so much variety. And one of the beauties of our profession is its incredible vast diversity of providers, practitioners, skill sets, all needed, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks for sharing that story. Because I think for a lot of people, you know, they're kind of curious as to how we decide to be a naturopathic doctor. And I can hear a lot of similarities between your story and mine in terms of my mom died of breast cancer when I was in just actually when I was in Bastyr, but she was diagnosed when I was a sophomore in high school. And it was one of those things where you're like, this doesn't fit for me. This isn't helping her. We need more people. And my mom actually had the beauty of working with Dr. Tim Birdsall, if you're familiar with him.
Oh, sure.
So that was fun. And he kind of wrote me in, or maybe brainwashed me into the system of naturopathic medicine. But like you were mentioning, one of the big things is that you were taught in a traditional method of natural medicine. And I think this is something that we've kind of lost a little bit with all of the supplements, with all of the IV therapy and some of the more advanced things out there that I'd love to talk about in terms of naturopathic medicine at its roots, because a lot of people, and maybe you've come into this too, is a lot of people ask me, well, are you a functional medicine doc or are you a naturopath? And I will say often I'm a functional naturopathic doctor because of the different things. But tell us a little bit, you know, so folks can understand the foundations of healing that naturopathic doctors really learn in training.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that the people that are involved with functional medicine and medical doctors and nurse practitioners and PAs that do integrative medicine, everybody has a role to play. I think the beauty and the uniqueness of naturopathic medicine is our philosophy and our strongest philosophical tenets, first of all, you know, like all doctors, first do no harm. Then we think about the idea of the healing power of nature. What does that mean? It means basically understanding that we all have an inherent capacity for healing, and we just need to clear the way to access that and stimulate that. We also can interpret that to mean that we like to use things from the natural world as tools and helpers and supports toward our goals of balanced good health. So things like healthy food, botanical, herbal medicines, hydrotherapy, things from the world of homeopathy, et cetera. And so that's the second tenet. And then another one has to do with treating the whole person. So if somebody comes into me with one part of their body that's causing issues, I need to understand that in the context of the rest of their overall system, physically through their breathing, their heart, their digestion, their urination, their skin, et cetera, and then contextualize all of that within their lifestyle choices, their cognitive health, their psycho-emotional health. What are the stressors in their life that really push them toward illness and imbalance? And to look at a whole person like that, many patients say to me, oh my God, I never had a doctor ask me all those questions. Yeah, that's right, because most doctors don't have time. You know, part of what sets us aside is that we really are successful part is that we spend a lot of time with patients. I mean, it is true. My first visits are an hour and a half. My follow-up visits are all half an hour. I don't like to see anybody for less than that. I can't learn about everything that I need to know to best help them. And then we're really interested in the concept of the doctor as teacher, that we're sort of co-learners in all that we do. And for us to, we're not coming down in some Machiavellian way to tell people what to do, but it's rather a discussion, a dialogue. It's sort of doctor-informed patient decision-making, if you will. And that doctor as teacher concept is very, very important to me. And then also just to play well in the sandbox, I refer out constantly for diagnostic and treatment help to other medical providers, and my door is wide open to receive them, and I do as well. So, you know, we're interested in removing the obstacles to cure, as we sometimes will say. Certain times people have behaviors, patterns, relationships, work that is not consistent with health. And so those are tough conversations to have with people, but it is an important part of what we do. And we're also very interested in helping support the whole emunctory system of the body. The emunctories are those things that help us to detox from the natural processes of the digestive process, but also to detox from things from the environment, whether it's the water, the food, the air, and our bodies are beautifully created, whatever you believe in, nature, God, whatever, to really detox through our breathing, through sweating, through having bowel movements and urinating. And I would also say to help, I often will be helping people detox in other ways in terms of from relationships that are harmful, from past trauma that they've had that they're carrying along in their health and wellness. So I feel like the naturopathic approach is just so beautiful, and we lean into it when we're doing our best work. I do treat a lot of people that come to me and they've been to functional medical doctors and they just don't want to take $400 worth of supplements every day, every month, 400 a month, like 15 or 20 pills every day. That's just, it's not really what they want to do. And I don't think that most of us are ill because of a lack of a vitamin pill, or an herbal pill. So we try to do everything in balance and also to just continue to learn and be open. I mean, I love marrying the history of our profession and the beautiful philosophy with advances of understanding in terms of medicine and pharmaceuticals. There's a time and a place for everything. The best naturopathic laws in the country, naturopathic doctors could practice as primary care providers and have fairly full formulary. I don't personally use drugs in my practice, but I certainly treat many people who are on drugs. So I'm educated in terms of drug-drug interactions, drug-nutrient interactions, drug-supplement interactions, et cetera. I am very interested in communicating with other providers who prescribe the drugs on deprescribing certain medications when and if we can, because we know that the more drugs a person is on, the more side effects they will develop. So it's a beautiful profession, and people are looking for that fresh perspective that I feel like naturopathic doctors often can bring to the table.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, one of the biggest things that you said, well, two, that I would like to highlight in particular, one, the body's inherent ability to heal itself. This is something I think we've overlooked. And even in the more so, yes, the functional medicine of all the different supplements, because when I look at it, I go, okay, if I'm giving someone 8 supplements, how am I doing anything different than giving all of these medications? So it's one of those things that I tend to look at and go, all right, how can we help that body? But I think a lot of folks have really gotten away from understanding that, oh, wait, I don't need something necessarily to heal my body. I need to look at all these obstacles. And yes, it's the hardest part, but dang it, I love that part of our medicine. It's my favorite. So that leads me.
I am somebody who studied a lot in terms of the world of homeopathy, which is one kind of natural medicine that is part of most naturopathic doctor educations. Some naturopathic doctors don't use any homeopathy. They don't like it. They don't want to use it. I have found it to be a beautiful, gentle, very whole person medicine at its core and by definition. Mm-hmm. And I have taught extensively. I've taught thousands of other providers across the medical landscape through the New England School of Homeopathy that Paul and I began in 1988. And we've taught homeopathy, all across America, but in Europe, in Asia, in Israel, in South Africa. I mean, we've really taken that on the road. And I can say that many people, when they study homeopathy, they feel like, oh, okay, now I understand this idea of stimulating, we call the vital force, the capacity, mm-hmm. that's what we're talking about when we're talking about stimulating the body's inherent healing capacity. And, more and more the research in the field of hormesis mm-hmm. Points to the power of the very, very minute dose. And so we are learning every day about that field. There's a wonderful PhD researcher at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst named Ed Calabrese, who has published literally hundreds and hundreds of articles on the topic of hormesis and wow. using and how the dose relationship is not linear. And so it's very interesting for us to be learning about that these days.
Oh, man. It's interesting, with homeopathy. I think a lot of people are like, wait, I'm taking a small amount of an herb that can create the same symptoms if I take a lot. How does this work? So let's talk a little bit about homeopathy for a minute, because I've actually never talked about it on my podcast. And yeah. I've just given a good little background into it for folks to kind of see, you know, explore it a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, when we give a homeopathic remedy, we are always giving the remedy for an individual, not for diagnosis. So I might have 10 little kids that come in, you know, let's say in the course of a week that have an earache. And I would be doing like any doctor, looking in their ear, feeling their glands, looking in their throat, doing, you know, taking their temperature and understanding. And it, many times the earache will look similar from childhood, you know, a little bulging, a little redness, injection of the eardrum. But you can tell right away that each child is experiencing it uniquely. Mm-hmm. And so one kid might be screaming and yelling and pulling on their ear. The other kid might be very, very passive and sort of listless. Some kids might be super, super thirsty and just drinking and drinking and drinking, or nursing and nursing and nursing, either for thirst or for comfort. And other kids turn their head away. You can't get them to drink at all. And so right away, we understand that illness plays out over individual biochemistry and what I would say is an individual homeopathic constitutional state. So we can give homeopathic remedies for the whole person, not just the chief complaint or the ailments that a person complains of. We're going to contextualize that in how is their cognition? What's their emotional state? What kind of foods do they like? Do they tend to be warm? Do they tend to be chilly? And to give a homeopathic remedy for the whole person at that moment in time. Provings where they took individual medicines and they gave them to healthy people. And the provings, which are the original drug studies, they predated drug studies, where you take healthy people and you see how this impacts them. And people don't necessarily realize that homeopathy predated the clinical trial in that way. But it has. And we've written a lot about the history of homeopathy, as well as provings and how provings are conducted and how we discover new homeopathic remedies. But it's a gentle, easy to learn for acute prescribing and first aid situations. That's super easy to teach. The constitutional prescribing for the whole person is a little bit more challenging. It's a broad science and art, I would say, that, you know, it just keeps, we keep adding to the information and knowledge that we have. And, you know, in the terms of the studies in homeopathy, many times they fail largely due to poor study design. You can't use homeopathy the way or study it the way you would study another drug. Like, let's give everybody the homeopathic remedy Roustox who has arthritis. Well, that doesn't make any sense if you truly understand the philosophy and the application of homeopathy. You'd have to individualize the treatment to the patient. In the studies that have been done like that, we show good efficacy across a number of different ailments, everything spanning things from diarrhea to depression to PMS to menopause symptoms. And those studies are published in peer-reviewed journals. When they do review studies, homeopathy fails because they include in those review studies all of the ones that have been poorly designed. So that's just something for people to keep in mind who are interested in learning more about homeopathy and its efficacy.
I think that's hugely important because homeopathy, much like Chinese medicine, I find it, you know, similar when I look for a Chinese formula for someone because I'm thinking much of the individual as a whole that's presenting in front of me at that moment. And yeah, how can you do a study on that? It's hard. It's hard because there's too many variables. So exactly. Folks, something to think about when you're figuring out what kind of medicine suits you the best. So I think now's a good time to segue into your book because I get asked questions so much about cancer therapy, what to do if you have cancer. And then of course your book, you know, treatment's over, you know, what's next. So I think, and she's got it. You're finished. You finished treatment. Now what? A Field Guide for Cancer Survivors. This is a great, great book there that it's valuable, I think, for anyone, also for us practitioners, because a lot of us, if we haven't specialized in looking into cancer care therapy, sometimes there's a lot of things that we don't know what to do and we got to keep up with things. So
I mean, 40% of men in this country and about 38% of women will develop cancer at some point in their lifetime. So it's a huge number. Many of those people will not die from their cancer. They will die from something else. In fact, breast cancer, the most common cause of death in women who have had breast cancer is heart disease. It's important for us to remember that, like, not you're focusing so much on the cancer. Don't take your eye off the ball of like what we really need to be preventing as well. But the book for me is a bit of a love letter to my profession.
Nice.
It really is. So,
So tell us a little bit about, you know, you had mentioned kind of in the description of it with all the different the team that you created. And I think this is really important because I get a lot of questions from Instagram followers and podcast listeners about who do I look for? How do I set up a team? And most people are wanting care on their terms, not straight, you know, oncology.
Right. About 80% of people going through cancer treatment are using some kind of natural or integrative medicine. So that spans everything from Reiki to massage to yoga to vitamins to diet to herbs to prayer. I mean, it's a very, very big number. What for me, I am a breast and ovarian cancer survivor and thriver. I turned out to have the BRCA1 mutation after testing negative for it a couple times before. My genes did not change. The test got better. So for me, it was just poor timing. I had been tested about a year before I found a lump in my breast. I found a lump in my breast a couple of months after a normal mammogram. I knew right away it wasn't good because everybody in my family, whoever had a lump had breast cancer, and everybody also kept testing negative. When we went back and tested everybody, everybody was positive. So the test really did get better. Our family carries a deletion, not a mutation. It's harder to see. Now anybody who's tested, they also test for deletions. So for me, you know, I knew right away, and if anybody's interested in naturopathic medicine used alongside conventional care, you can type in my name, Amy Rothenberg, and Huffington Post and breast cancer or cancer. I wrote extensively during my treatment, every step of the way, what are the naturopathic things we do in and around surgery to have best outcomes? What can we do during chemotherapy to make any cancer cells that are around more chemosensitive, to prevent side effects, to address any side effects that arise? And then, of course, afterward, and the main topic of my book, which I'll get into more, is how to mop up afterward. How do we deal with changing the internal environment to be less hospitable to cancer in the future? And how do we use naturopathic medicine to help address some of the symptoms that arose due to the powerful and sometimes very harsh and necessary conventional medicine approaches? And I would say that it's a yes and, it's not an either or. I knew right away I was going to do everything conventional medicine offered because when I looked at the statistics for what I had, the conventional approach, I had a very, very good chance of a very long survival. And so I wasn't going to snub that. And I have had patients, including some naturopathic doctors who've been diagnosed who do not want to use conventional care. And I wish I could say they had wonderful outcomes. They did not. Some of them are no longer with us. Some of them are really struggling. So I feel like conventional care is getting better and better. You know, when my mom was going through this in 1976, the treatments were so harsh. I'm sure she died from the treatments, not from the cancer. Now it's more, what's the least amount we can give to have the best possible outcome as opposed to the most amount we can give without killing a person? That's a big difference. And then for me, I knew I was going to put together my dream team. I was going to find people in all the areas of my life that I knew could best support me and my body's inherent capacity for healing and to support me through the whole treatment process. And then once I was done with treatment, I just launched into basically literally everything that I wrote in that book. And I walk the walk. You know, I am anything that's in that book and I ask people to do, I am doing it. And in fact, I would never ask anybody to do everything that I'm doing because it's pretty much too much. But for me, it's worth it. And I'm a pretty disciplined person. And I see patients just 2.5 days a week. So I have time to do the other kinds of things that are, for me, you know, I feel keeping me alive and not just alive, thriving. I mean, I feel quite, people always say, well, you must have like some brain fog from 18 rounds of chemo. I'm like, you know, I don't feel like I have brain fog, unless I always had a little bit of brain fog. I'm as good as I ever was, you know, and I feel creative and I feel my open-hearted, beautiful family and friend group. And, you know, and physically, nothing bothers me. I'm knocking on wood. You know, I just feel great. At my last chemo, I said to Paul, honey, in 6 months, I want to do my first triathlon. I've never done a triathlon. So every year now I do a couple triathlons, kind of keeps me, my feet to the fire, working out on a daily basis. You know, there's many areas that we can all improve in terms of our health. And I would say exercise is probably number one for almost everybody. We probably need more. We probably need it in all the categories of something aerobic, something stretching, something weight bearing. And then also working with myself in terms of the medications that I take to continue to support an anti-cancer approach we know that some of them lead to side effects. So for instance, I take an aromatase inhibitor because I had estrogen receptor positive cancer. We know that can be very hard on the bones. Yeah. So I redoubled my efforts in terms of making sure I'm taking the correct calcium supplementation. I know you interviewed Dr. John Neustadt, wrote a wonderful book on fracture proof your bones. I ascribe to everything he says. And I made sure I'm doing my weightlifting a couple of times a week, and I'm not eating those foods that pull calcium out into the urine. You know, I'm treating myself under the guidance of colleagues. I do go to a naturopathic doctor myself to help prevent side effects from the treatments that I believe are life-saving. So, you know, it was such a fun book to write. I enjoyed writing it so much, and it's been really a pleasure to be offering it into the world.
That's awesome. I thank you as well, because, you know, for us, there's not a lot of great article, or there's articles, but there's not books, right? Especially focused on what to do after. You get all of it during, but after you're kind of like, you know, you're done, game over. And it's thinking about lifetime now. What does the rest of your life look like? So, no, yeah. This is.
I think for a lot of people, you know, what the conventional medicine offers after treatment ends is lab work and scanning, surveillance. Those are very important. Of course, we know if you get another cancer or metastatic illness, whatever you get, catching it early is always going to be best. So we're not going to stop those. But for me, there's so much out there that's evidence-based that we know can help improve both quality of life and health outcomes. The studies are, and there's 340 or so references. Anytime I say anything, make any claim, I cite a reference, a study that was done on people. And, you know, I think that's important to know, because a lot of people feel anxious about, well, I don't know, my oncologist might not want me to take curcumin, or I don't know about green tea, you know. And I'm like, look, you can take this book and you can just show them six references here about curcumin. There is something to be said for being proactive, and also to feel engaged and to feel some self-agency around your own health. Part of going through conventional cancer care is a concept of total surrender. You sort of have to just, you are theirs to do what they need to do. And you have to find people you have faith and confidence in, but, you know, grabbing back some of that self-agency around how you feel, you know, in terms of energy level, brain fog, soreness in the muscles and the joints, problems with intimacy and sex, challenges in terms of lymphedema, peripheral neuropathy. These are all things for which there are natural medicine approaches. And when people hear that, they're like, oh my God, are you kidding? I wish I knew that 10 years ago. And a lot of people do feel abandoned by the oncology world, because they're not doing anything proactive, with the exception of some of the medications like I described, like Arimidex. That is a proactive thing you're doing to help prevent recurrence, for sure. But in terms of some of the lifestyle things, many hospitals and cancer centers now are sort of offering them on a menu, but they're not prescribed. And so, you know, if it takes time, if it costs money, if it's learning something new, you know, people aren't going to do it. People don't tend to want to do things they're not good at. They don't tend to want to try new things, especially when they're exhausted from cancer treatment. So a lot of what I'm doing is sharing information, educating people, and acting like a cheerleader in a way, and inspiring people to, like, hey, you know, I don't think you have to actually feel as crappy as you feel. There's things to do. So there's a lot of me in the book. I do have a whole chapter in there, which is called How to Talk So Your Oncologist Listens and Listen So Your Oncologist Talks. That's all about self-agency, empowerment, how you can go into a visit and get the most out of it for yourself. I also have a whole chapter in this book on caregiving. Many people that have cancer have also cared for other people that have had cancer. I am in that boat myself. I cared for my sister who had metastatic illness. And, you know, that's a whole ball of wax itself. And I have a lot of practical suggestions for people who are caregivers. So, you know, that's it. And there's a few fun pictures in this book of me. So people, I've gotten a lot of emails from people I don't know. Oh my God, I love that picture of you on your volleyball team in high school.
Awesome. Yeah. So we get to know a little bit more about Dr. Rothenberg through the process of the book as well. Well, oh my goodness, we've talked a lot of things. We've talked definitely probably one of the most important things is really taking agency over your health, but also, you know, knowing that you have the capacity to heal. And this is what I want folks to really, you know, take home here. So where can folks find your book? Where can they find you and interact with you so they can get more information?
You bet. Will you have show notes at the bottom of your
account? I will.
Okay. I will send you a whole little bundle of that stuff, but the book is available anywhere books are sold. It's available as an ebook, soft cover, hardcover, and I read it for Audible. Nice. So you, and my husband says, if you listen to it on Audible, you should listen to it at 1.2 the time. My wonderful audio engineer, Peter Acker, at Armadillo Audio kept telling me to slow down. And my husband says, yes, but now it doesn't sound like you. So if you listen to the Audible, put it on 1.1 or 1.2. And then me, you can find me. I practice in Northampton, Massachusetts. And you can find me through my website at dramyrothenberg.com, D-R-A-M-Y, rothenberg.com. I also write often on Medium and Huffington Post. And you can follow me on social media if you want. And all that information will be in the show notes at the bottom of the page here.
Yes, you do have a lot of publications. So folks, I mean, you could look at a lot of what you would think of Huffington Post, like she mentioned before, and then Medium, always a great spot for great information. So
I started writing early in my profession in 1986, and I have written on many, many subjects. So you can type in my name and whatever subject you're interested in, I may well have written something on it. Now, of course, some of this was before the internet. I have tried to upload some of my older pieces. I also worked as the medical editor for the Institute for Natural Medicine for 4 years, until a couple of years back. And I generated many of the FAQ series on the Institute for Natural Medicine website. And a lot of that is interesting background information about naturopathic medicine, as well as naturopathic approaches. I wrote the pieces on cognitive decline, insomnia, anxiety, some big ticket items there. So, you know, my voice is a little less in those because I was writing for not my own personal audience, but they're very fact-based and evidence-based, citing the research on those kinds of topics. And I also like to run fun pieces. I published a piece today on social media on what's in my thermos. And during this cold time of year, what can we bring along with us for warmth and comfort, with some links out to some wonderful recipes and ideas. So
We'll have to check that out. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Rothenberg, for coming on.
Thank you. I appreciate
it.
Thank you for having me.
And likely we will be talking in the future with some more topics because I think it's important to keep promoting the profession.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Hey, fellow health junkie. Thanks for listening to the Health Fix podcast. If you enjoyed tuning in, please help support me to get the word out about the podcast. Subscribe, rate, and review, and just get that word out. Thanks again for listening.